Very welcome back. It's season 4, episode 29. It's our PFAI Awards special. Myself, Johnny Ward, and Dan McDonald, Stephen McGuinness, Pico Lopez, Danny Grant, and Mark Doyle form a quartet of a very packed show today. Thanks to our sponsors, Lottoland, where you'll find all the odds and special bets for the rest of the SSE or Tricity League Premier Division season. Check out lottoland.ie/sportsbook. And you will find us at Podcast Republic, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, at LY Weekly on Twitter in association with Air Sport and independent.ie. Now, if we have been, quote-unquote, missing in action over the last couple of weeks, there were a few reasons for that, but missing in action is quite apt, actually, because Dan has only become a dad since we were last on, and his very, very beautiful daughter, Mia, is partly the reason why he's kind of abandoned work, probably for the first time in about 20 years, Dan. Give yourself, your daughter arrived and you're able to take a bit of time off, and may I just extend my hearty congratulations on the big news, and now we can get back to football and all that, I guess.
You're a good man, John. Yeah, well, I did actually, on the last show now, that sort of 10 minutes I recorded by video was actually outside the rotunda around 3 in the morning while she was in the early stages of labour inside. And I was sent out in COVID times. You obviously can't be there the whole time. So that was the dedication to the show, because it was like the final night of the league, the Monday night. And I did suggest at one point going downstairs to record maybe the podcast for 15, 20 minutes, which didn't go down very well because she had just started going into labour at that stage.
That is dedication for you.
So right. we went into the rotunda at half time in the games, and she went in for 15 minutes while I was sort of watching, you know, what was the game, the Finn Harps Waterford game and stuff like that, and then got sent home. So it feels like the two like overlap, that my desire to watch the games and record the pod maybe has come up a couple of times since, is a bit insensitive in the circumstances. Anyway, she's alive, she's healthy, and we're here. So we can get on with the show.
Yes, and she certainly came in with a proper good head of hair, which brings me nicely to Pico Lopez. You can't actually see him at the moment, but Pico, this has gotten a bit out of hand.
Yeah, look, yeah, it's something that probably the fruit of lockdown, you could say, the first one. I decided to grow the hair out, and then I just decided to stick with it for just really my own purposes. I enjoyed it, and I'm getting a bit sick of it now. So the barber's going to open up quick enough, and come Friday now, a lot of it will be gone.
Well, do you have any kids yourself?
No, none at the moment, no.
So, Steve McGuinness, can you relate to Dan's trying to juggle the professional life and obviously the birth of his first daughter and so forth?
Yeah, I would have been in a similar position to Dan. I was playing with Dundalk. We played Shamrock Rovers in at Richmond Park, and I was racing across to the rotunda, left the wife to go and play the game, and then came back. Thankfully, she hadn't had the child at the time. We got absolutely thumped. We had 3 sent off, and we were beaten. I think it was 4-0 by Shamrock Rovers that night. So, there were the memories I had of the birth.
Happy memories.
Were you on a show with us when Chris Shields had to do a legger because his wife was possibly going into labour? Yeah, so it seems to be a theme of our PFAI team shows.
It's all about November. So, Stephen, you're here with us, obviously, to it's sort of the annual show around the your end-of-year awards. But obviously, it's a different year this year in every sense and in every aspect of our lives. So maybe tell us what you're doing this year, because we don't have the big black tie event that the players look forward to. Like everything, we're adapting to a digital world.
Yeah, you're right, Dan, and things have changed, unfortunately. But I think one of the things that from our office and from our management committee, what they wanted to ensure was that there was an event and the players were recognised for the achievement this season. I think you look at some other player associations and they haven't done that. They're going to leave a gap, and I don't want COVID to leave a gap in our awards and a gap in our lives. So we've decided that we're going to live stream the event on the 9th at 12:30. The links will be sent through our social media platform. So Darren Maloney will MC it. We have a trial run of it on Monday. So it's something new to us, Dan. So hopefully it goes according to plan. But yeah, look, it's just very important, I think, that the players, they've gone through a huge amount in the season just gone. And I think they deserve to be recognised for their achievements. And it's important from our perspective to put on and do the best that we can do in the circumstance that we've got. So instead of where normally I would come on here and we'd announce teams of the year and all the rest. We're going to announce the Premier Division, First Division and Young Player of the Year. And then on the 4th of December, we'll announce the First Division Team of the Year and the 7th leading up to the 9th, because obviously we need content each day. So building up to the live streaming event then on the 9th.
So I mean, I think some people will be aware already of the shortlist for the players, and obviously the fact that Pico was here with us, you know, suggests that he's in the running for the main award. But if you want to give us your shortlist then for Premier, First Division and Young.
Yeah, so Premier Division, the shortlist is Roberto Lopez, Danny Grant and Jack Bourne in the Premier Division. In the First Division, Brandon Kavanagh, Mark Doyle and Yo-Yo Madi. And for the Young player, it's Dawson Devoy, Danny Grant and Brandon Kavanagh. So
It's interesting, there's a kind of a cross-pollination there as well, with Danny Grant in twice and Brandon Kavanagh in twice.
Yeah, the award, it is interesting. The Young Player of the Year award is one with the most votes, because the Young Player is voted for with both players in both divisions. So you can't have that crossover of obviously players in the First Division voting for a Young Player out of that division. And look, it's a great achievement from Danny to be voted for both the senior and the Young Player.
What's the age on the Young Player, Stephen?
So the Young Player is 23 is the age bracket that we have. So it's 23 and below. It covers it. It depends. Like, some people could argue that it should be younger, because the average age, look at Bohemian's team last year. I think Bo's average age was 24 was the average age of the player at the team, not just the youngest player. So that's the age that we have at the moment, and that's what's gauged on.
Because I think a lot of people will look at that and say Brandon Kavanagh would be maybe a slight surprise, but as you mentioned, it's the fact that the First Division players can vote on it without giving too much away. That's obviously something that's given him a significant array of votes, shall we say?
Yeah, exactly. And look, that's I suppose it shows you sort of from our perspective, Dan. There's a huge amount of work gone into this voting. Like, this is. It is every club gets exact same amount of votes. They must give us the exact same amount back, so that's fair to everybody, because there's no point in one club having 8 votes and another club sending in 15 votes. There's a differential there. So we ensure that everything is above board and is done accurately and the best that we can do it. So as I said, we're delighted from our perspective with the amount of work that's gone in from the office, Dan. Look, I can't tell you how much work Simone, Emma and Ollie have put in. It's actually more work in doing a live stream than going to the market, to be honest.
I can imagine, yeah.
Far easier to organise, I have to say, than trying to put this on. But look, it's about the players and it's about recognising them, and it's important that we put as much effort into it as we possibly can.
So Pico, sorry, you mean you're for you personally, I mean, you've attended these awards and watched these awards over the years and so on. To be in the top three, to be voted in the top three by your peers, it must be a proud moment.
Yeah, it's an incredible feeling, and I'm honoured to be considered nomination. Even like I think the top quality players that are in this league, and to be amongst the top three, like it's a massive moment for me, and I'm honoured to be in there. Like, and it's unusual, I suppose you could say, for a defender to be amongst the nominees. Just to be up with that caliber of player, it's unbelievable, really.
That's a very fair point as well about the defender, because we tend to focus obviously on the likes of Jack Byrne. Danny Grant has had a brilliant campaign. You could name a load of other forward or midfield players, and your progression and I suppose your performances in Europe as well this season, you've certainly come to the limelight.
Yeah, well, like as you say, like I'm still a bit baffled obviously, because there's been some incredible talent on display. Like Jack has been unreal again this year. I think he took it to another level, which I didn't think was possible after last year. And even Danny Grant, like I think he's really dragged both teams in certain games, and he has that flair that just catches the eye and been exceptional. And he said you can name one or two others. Like from myself, I just tried to do my job for the team and try and get the players around me playing well, and obviously some people thought that I've done a good job with this year. Like, so it's just incredible, and it's great to be involved with the top other two players.
But do you feel in yourself, I mean, you listen, sometimes players don't need to be told they've had a good season. They'll know themselves. I mean, do you feel yourself that you've gone to another level this year? You know, do you feel that you've found the level yourself?
Yeah, I think obviously after winning the cup final last year, that sense of confidence was definitely there in me. And approaching the start of this season, I think it was a bit more calmer in my mind. And obviously we knew how to win in big games. Like, and that's a huge part of how I play my game. Obviously, if the team is playing well, I like to think I'm you, or I'm really, if I'm playing by the team or playing well, like I should say, like, because I'm only as good as the team and the players around me. Like, so obviously winning that cup last year, massive confidence boost, and being able to come into the season like with that behind you and really attack the season, and the confidence of knowing how to win games has definitely helped me.
The one thing I'm just going to speak about a couple of your teammates, and I think the one thing about the closed doors experience that maybe as journalists and those who are lucky enough to go to games get, you get to hear a lot more of the vocals than you would have in the stadium where there's like 5,000-6,000 people there. And just watching that Rovers team, like, I think it's really, it comes across now what an influence someone like Joey O'Brien is. Like, I know that you would be quite vocal yourself, but it's really noticeable someone like Joey, his steady and influence. Like, what's he been like for you as a defender, even just to watch someone like him, a professional like him?
Yeah, Joey's been top class since day one, since he came in. And you're dead right. Like, I think you can hear him from training, even like how loud he is and how vocal he is. And it just switches everybody on and keeps everybody on it. And in terms of the ability that Joey has, it's second to none. I've never seen him been done in a game, and just his class on the ball, it just really gets us playing. But as you say, his voice is so important, because we could be defending high up like in the opposition fullback and you can hear him scream in the press, and it's just switching everybody on and make sure everyone's on it. Like, so to have that in a team, like it's vital.
It's been interesting as well, I suppose, just recent weeks to see the likes of Reece Marshall come in. And you're looking at, even if you're looking ahead to next year, you're looking at the likes of Faruja and Brandon Kavanagh coming back in on the left, Ronan Finn's been playing on the right. Obviously Joey O'Brien can play on the right, and then you have Marshall coming in, yourself, Scales has come in a lot and played, and then obviously Lee Grace, and there's a hell of a lot of competition already for next season, whatever your formation is going to be.
Yeah, there's serious competition in the team, and it's credit to the gaffer and getting the right players in to really drive up the standard. Like, and I think Greece has been unlucky this year that, like, Finner obviously has been playing in the same position, and Finner's been quality again. Like, and it's the captain of the club, but anytime Reece has come in, he's done really, really well. I think he's done an excellent job there on the weekend in the semi-final. Like, and I definitely think there's more to come from Reece, because he's a smashing player.
Just another thing as well. Sorry, Dan. It's quite staggering that like four Shamrock Rovers players were in international squads recently. Three in the Irish squad, and obviously two. Jack being quite prominent in that game as well, and yourself being involved with Cape Verde getting called up to their squads, which is a really remarkable thing for a League of Ireland team.
Yeah, it's incredible, and it's great to see. And I think, obviously, hopefully it can be more of a common team going forward. Like, the lads have shown how good they've been this year. Like, likes of Brooke and Aaron Mack. Obviously, Jack has been there before. Like, and not taking away from Jack's quality, he probably deserves to be there more often and maybe playing. Like, but I'm delighted for the likes of Graham and Macker as well, who've worked so hard this season and have really shown their quality. And I think it's not really shocking when you say, like, we've gone undefeated in the league this year, and them two boys have been like a big part of that, like, and they're in form, like, so why not give them the opportunity, like, just want to lose.
Stephen, like, as a defender yourself, as a ex-defender yourself, I mean, you're probably always watching defenders in the league, you know, and their development closely. I mean, can you speak about how Pico has improved from even the player he was at Bowes and early Rovers to what he is now?
Yeah, I think he's matured massively. I would have seen him playing at Bowes. He played in midfield, and I think he's matured. And just some of the stuff as well off the field. He's our vice chairman of the Players Association at the moment. He would have been one of the leading voices in regards to the Black Lives Matter and the players taking the knee before the game. He's headed up a campaign for us with the schools. Himself, Sean Gannon, Anya O'Gorman and others have worked with the schools with Show Racing Red Card. So there's a bit more to Pico than just as a player. He gives a huge amount off the field as well. And his development as a player hasn't come as a surprise to anybody who would know him or who's been watching him. He's become a more powerful figure. He looks a leader in that team now. And I suppose it's just where the club goes next and where he goes next, I suppose. I mean, we'd love to see the likes of Shamrock Rovers get into group stages of Europa Leagues and being, I suppose, from a professional point of view, driving the whole game on. But as I said already, he's not just a credit on the pitch, he's a credit off the pitch. And that's something that that we don't take it for granted as well at the association, with what he's done for us as well, and we appreciate him. But as a defender, I don't think there's many better in the league.
Yeah, there's a couple of league-wide issues we want to discuss in a second. But maybe just before we discuss that, I mean, it's a big week for you, Pico, and You've had a strange one, actually, really. I mean, you've had the great honour of being called into the Cape Verde squad, the national team you were away, but then you had the issue with your flight home and someone had COVID on the flight home. So you were sent into a mini quarantine.
Yeah, it was crazy. Obviously, like the experience in Cape Verde and Rwanda, where we travelled over to play the return fixture, like it was fantastic. Like, and everything was done right in terms of we were tested, I think, before we left, and then four times when we were over there. So and everyone was really like spot on from a COVID point of view. And then I came back and was across the country again to Ballybuffet. Felt like longer than coming home from Rwanda, to be honest with you. But obviously playing the game and dug a win there, luckily against Finn Harps. And then, yeah, kind of continued the week as normal, trained as normal. And then the day before we were due to play Sligo, I had a missed call around Saturday afternoon, and I rang the number back and it was the HSE sort of voicemail. And I was thinking, oh, what's this for? Like, and then I couldn't get through to them. And then I had a message there saying that I was a close contact of a positive case. Like, so straight away, I rang the manager, I rang a club doctor, asked for advice, and unfortunately, meant I missed out on the semi-final on Sunday. But because this happened on the 19th, where my flight home was, I'm already a good chunk into my quarantine and should be available then for the final.
Yeah, that's it's obviously a bit of a shock, like, you know, but it's you know, you obviously feel fine. I mean, the experience of being involved around international football, I mean, what's that been like? I mean, even just on a personal level, like to connect with that side of your family as such, you know, or to be representing that side of your family, it must be a very special thing.
Yeah, I'm very proud to represent me Cape Verdean family, like especially my dad. Like, obviously growing up, probably I didn't take as much interest in it as I probably should, and realise like where my heritage is. Like, but over the last few years, like I really delved into it, and to be able to represent my family playing for the national team, it's just an incredible feeling. Like, and then obviously you're going over to these games like in Africa, where I'd never thought I'd be able to go see, like, these countries. Like Rwanda was absolutely beautiful. And then you're with a group of players who play all over the world, and just seeing the culture and how they interact, it's just brilliant. And then from a football perspective, the quality is even higher again. Like, so you're learning every day, like, and it's just great to be a part of.
Yeah, like, what are the lads like? I mean, are a lot of them similar to yourself in that, like, you know, they grew up in other countries, and or like, what's the breakdown like of the squad?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, obviously, would have been very few, I think, were born in Cape Verde and then obviously moved out there. A lot of them were born, say, in likes of Holland and Portugal and France, yeah. with Cape Verdean parents, like, and that's where they kind of played their football in them countries. And then a lot of them come the route I have, where I've declared later on in life. Like, but it's a great group of players now, I have to say. The quality is really high, like, and the teams that they play across Europe really shows that.
Yeah, it's I guess it seems like it's quite a profound experience as well, visiting completely different parts of the world and Africa, obviously, like Rwanda.
Yeah, 100%. I say, like, if you ask me, like, if I wasn't playing for Cape Verde, do you fancy a trip to Rwanda? I'd probably never go. Like, it's just and the fact that I went there, I didn't know what to expect now going there. I was a bit worried in a sense, but it was an absolutely beautiful country, a fantastic experience. And just being able to say that I've been there, I've seen it, and it's just incredible to tell the stories that I have from there.
Just in relation to, I suppose, your season as well at home, you know, when Shamrock Rovers played Milan, it was one of these great kind of things that people who don't watch the League of Ireland are necessarily that often are going to watch it. And I remember my brother, who would be a massive Liverpool fan, but he texted me after the game. He said, "Geez, your man Lopez was unbelievable for Rovers." I thought, and what did you think yourself? It was like you got the Dan was on about hearing lads in the ground. Like, I could actually hear his Latin Ibrahimovic. I don't know what language he was talking in, but I could hear him talking to the players that night. And you were up against him, and geez, more than hell. Your own, really.
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience, but it's one of them you don't want to kind of play the occasion before it actually happens. So it was kind of just focusing on the job ahead, like, and like from the off, like he was at me, like, trying to get in my head, and I was just trying to just switch off, like,
Ibrahimovic.
Yeah.
So he was the one trying the gamesmanship with you, like.
Yeah, he was trying to kind of like just take me out of focus and just trying to get the better of me. I was just trying to focus on the job at hand, and then that's all you can do in that, because I can't really say anything to him that he probably hasn't heard before. As the game went on, then he got a bit frustrated and we had a bit of exchange then afterwards. But it was just fantastic.
Like, this is one of the best little anecdotes I've ever heard in LOI Weekly. How's Latan trying to get inside the head of a Shamrock Rovers defender to ruffle him? Like, I love it. What did you actually say to him in the end?
The one thing I can't really repeat what he said to me, but just before they scored, I think I clipped his ankle and he wasn't happy about that. Like, so after they scored, he was like, "Hey, come on, you don't kick me no more. And we walked away, and afterwards, he was just like, "Come on, do you want to hold my hand?" Because we're getting really tight to him, mate, and he was getting a bit frustrated. He's like, "Come on, do you want to hold my hand? Come on, we're walking, hold my hand." I think Joey O'Brien got it as well. I think he told Joey O'Brien he can cut his garden over in LA. Like, so he was very vocal on the pitch, like, but not necessarily to his own players.
the quality of him, like, was it totally off the charts? Because I was trying to, like, I spent a lot of the game just looking at him, the way his movement, because for a guy who obviously is very old by professional football standards, he was just strolling around the pitch. What was it like being in proximity to him?
You know, like, what you see is what you get, like, on the TV. Like, I suppose, like, you know what quality he has. Like, and obviously, he's a massive man. So, like, he's so physically imposing. Like, so in terms of, like, getting involved in strength battles, like, you're better off just kind of maybe letting him have it and hope that he lays it off backwards. Like, but what really caught me off guard is how sharp he was. I think he laid off a few passes and he just darted in behind you, and he was like, for a man who was 38, I know he's turned 39 recently, to get up to that speed so quickly, like, and like, he was leaving people behind him was really impressive. Like, so, like, the athlete that he is, it's incredible. And then to have all that sort of skill and attributes with him, he's a smashing player and definitely the best I've ever come up against.
Marvellous times.
Cup final.
This is brilliantly set up after McElhenney's performance against Athlone. I know McElhenney was, you know, playing against team inferior to them, but I got a real buzz, Dan, for this game watching Dundalk strut their stuff in recent weeks, particularly in recent weeks.
I think the Athlone game now, to be fair, like,
very good against Bowes as well.
No, they were very good against Bowes. I mean, it set it up. I mean, like, it's a funny one, this, and we can say this and maybe others can't, but it does feel like it's the top two teams in the country still, as much as Bowes finished second. I think what Dundalk did to Bowes in the semi-final showed what they can do on their day. So, I mean, we go back to that game in what was it? It's like a different time. Was it March, you know, February, with the 7,000 people in Tala and the 3-2 and probably one of the best League of Ireland games in recent memory. And we're probably hoping for more of the same on Sunday. I mean, like, from your perspective as a player, Pico, I mean, there's still something about these Dundalk games, I think, is there? Like, they are still a team that you want to take down.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you look at Dundalk over the last few years, like, what they've done in the league, like, it's a fantastic achievement. And you can never underwrite them. Like, they've had a bit of a fall this year, like, but they're still a top quality side, and they've showed that, as you say, in recent weeks and even through the night, like, the confidence that'll be flowing through them now coming into this final. Like, so you can't underestimate them, Doc. Like, they're a quality side, and they've shown that over a number of years, and they're capable of turning teams over at ease, like, at any stage. So, like, we have to be right on it.
I mean, you're so used to the closed doors thing now that it's not a talking point anymore, but at the same time, you know, going to the Aviva, you'll have your memories of last year, and I'm sure you had special memories of, I don't know, friends or family or whoever it was that was there. And it's a big old stadium, and yet there's no one there on Sunday. I mean, how do you feel about that side of things?
Yeah, obviously, we're probably used to it now. Like, but I think always when matches start, like, you zone out. Like, you just focus on the game. Like, and I suppose the atmosphere, not that it's lost on you, like, but you can focus on it. Because once you start focusing on the atmosphere, like, your head goes out of the game. Like, and so, like, I think there'd be just more focus on the game and doing our jobs. Like, and obviously, afterwards, whatever may happen, like, that's when you take it in, like, and you soak it in and the atmosphere, and you realise what a great day it was, like, last year. Like, so, it'd be unfortunate the fans can't come there and pack it out again and be there to support us. Like, but we have to be professional and do our jobs about it.
Like, I suppose it's in your nature to impose your style on every game. I mean, I guess that's got to be the plan for Sunday again. I mean, you're not going to be giving us your tactics or your game plan, but that is the Rovers way of doing things at the moment, is just do what you normally do, I guess. It's served you pretty well thus far.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we try to stick to our principles in any game. Obviously, I think the Finn Harps game is an exception where you do have to kind of play the conditions at time. But no, we try to play to our strengths and what we have in this team. Like, and that's obviously walking the ball, like, through our midfield and trusting the players that we have. Like, so, look, we'll be showing up Sunday, backing ourselves and doing what we do. Like, and I'm sure Dundalk will be doing the same.
Stephen, from a neutral perspective, Stephen, I mean, what's your take on the final as a, you know, after what's been a difficult season, let's be honest, and we'll maybe talk about that in a second and 2021, but like, you're just hoping we finish on a bit of a high, really, because it's still a massive audience, even if there's no one in the stadium.
Yeah, I still think it's the biggest individual day of the year, obviously, and I think we've got arguably the two best teams on form at the moment in the country playing against each other, and the cup finals of the last number of years have been really good. Last year's final was great, so I think Dundalk, it sometimes coming into these games, it's who wants it a little bit more than, and I just wonder, is from Dundalk's point of view, there's a lot of Europa League games under their belt, lots of miles in the legs, and there'll be another Europa League game again before the cup final. So will that give Shamrock Rovers the edge?
You can't be saying that. Who wants it a bit more? It's a cup final. They surely want it as much as the other.
I think sometimes, Johnny, if you look at last year as well with Rovers, I just think Rovers, sometimes if you've won the league and the other team hasn't had any silverware, there's just that little bit more drive sometimes by the other team. I think there's a slight thing with Dundalk. They've played in the Aviva, an empty Aviva, a couple of times now. And that could be a little factor as well. But look, I'm looking forward to it. It'll hopefully be a great day. We're still waiting to see whether we'll actually get an invitation to go or not. I know the protocols in regards to the amount of people that can go to the final.
There are only 50,000 seats. You wouldn't be able to space it out.
it's a strange one. I mean, just a general picture, because we're obviously hoping, like, this is as much as Dundalk play Arsenal next week, you know, the season finishes, I suppose, and for, you know, domestically on Sunday. And I was speaking to a couple of people yesterday since I've been back to work, and, you know, someone put it in a very straightforward way to me that with 2021 at the moment, like, there's no title sponsor, there's no government funding secured, there's, you know, question marks still around, you know, media rights and structure and this. Like, you'd obviously know how members are feeling, Stephen. Like, what type of time you think we're heading into here for players in the league in the next couple of months? And are you having discussions with sort of official people? Because I know the FAI now speak to you these days, unlike they did in the past. You know, what sort of vibe are you getting about 2021 from people?
Yeah, I suppose, first of all, I think it's been a fair achievement to finish the season. I think you've got to give credit to the clubs and the FAI and obviously the players for getting us to the end of the season in one piece. And we've got one more game to go. So I think credit has to be given on that side of things. I think heading into next season, I think the clubs have been told to budget on what they got last season on a 17 game season, so that's going to be difficult. Obviously, we're into 30 odd games hopefully for the season ahead. It looks like the season will kick off 2 weeks later. It looks like it'll kick off on the 26th of Feb and roll to the 7th for the cup final on the 7th. So it's at this moment in time, you would like to think that the government will come with the funding when approached by the FAI to fill the gap between what they received last year for a 17-game season and what a full season would be this year. So again, there'll be discussions with government over the next couple of weeks to ensure that the clubs know fully what the budget is for the year ahead. A lot of the clubs, Dan, will be able to make a certain amount of signings, but for a full squad, I don't know whether that's the finances are in place or the foresight in regards to where that what the exact money will be. So I think you've seen a lot of the club signing players as it is. We run a training camp online this year with Dean Clark, which starts the day after the cup final to try and keep the players in shape and hopefully run a showcase game at the start of January. But I think in general the players are optimistic in regards to next season. The one point you made is no sponsor for the league, no sponsor for the FAI Cup, no sponsor on the women's side of the game either. So obviously we have a new CEO who's only in the door. I've yet to speak to him. I hope to speak to him next week, and what his plans are in regards to the development of the game. Because I saw the piece, Dan, you wrote today around Brexit and around, you know, young players and everything else. With England, we still have to see what way that's going to play out, because I still think our league is going to be vitally important for the short term and medium term in regards to our international team. As we touched on earlier, our league is becoming more and more important as each year goes by. And if Brexit comes and our young players can't go to England, our league is going to become even more important.
Even though, the point is that it does seem that all the clubs in England have been given some kind of nod that they are okay to keep signing players from Ireland age 16 and over, which, I mean, I think we've had discussions about this previously, and a lot of us didn't think this was going to happen. And even some people who I've spoken to who've been receiving calls haven't really been able to establish why this is happening. And I went to the English FA yesterday for comment, and they said they were still talking to FIFA about it. Yet it does seem that clubs legally have been told they can pursue it. I don't know, wasn't really expecting to talk about this, but can you shed any light on this?
I spoke to the PFA on it, and the PFA were clear to me that, you know, the movement of people between Ireland and England was going to allow it. But again, if you speak to the legal people, they're saying to you, well, how long, from a FIFA rules perspective, FIFA would have to change their rules, and they don't see FIFA change their rules just specifically for Ireland. So
yes,
and that seems to be on the legal, like I spoke to Stuart Gilhooly earlier, and Stuart's looked at from a legal perspective and just can't see how FIFA are going to make one change just for us. So I can't see it, but there's so much talk around it, and it makes you believe that something can be trashed out, but I just don't see FIFA changing the rules just for us.
Just on that, because Brexit was one of these things that everyone voted for thinking it wouldn't happen type of thing, and now the repercussions are like, oh my God, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? But from an Irish perspective, say if it does come to pass that the minors can't go over until they are of that age and they have to be dealt with here and coached here, how ready is the League of Ireland to actually put on proper academies, and with the help of the 13s, 15s, 17s and the 19s league, that's fine. But how ready is it? You look at, say, the likes of Kelleher playing for Liverpool last night, players that have been educated at all the way through at a top level. How ready are we in Ireland to bridge the gap between an Irish club bringing them on and an English club bringing them on?
We're a good bit off that. Like, if we're being realistic, we're a good bit off the facilities and everything else. Now, the reality on it is we are still producing players. Like, we're still producing the Dawson, the Voyes, the Danny Grants, the Brandon Cavins are still coming through. It's just the structure of what we've got here isn't at the level that it's at in the UK. So we don't have full-time coaches, academy coaches. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the players training in the mornings and going to school in the afternoons. But that's not something that we can't create here. Like, with a bit of imagination and some investments, we're capable of doing it.
Do we need the government?
We'd absolutely need the government, absolutely. But it needs a joined-up thinking. It needs everybody to get around the table and say, okay, and that's why I always felt it would be a positive for us if Brexit came in and our young players couldn't go. I always felt, Johnny, and I've had chats with Dan for a long time over this, players going at 15 and 16 years of age to England is crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
We'll have Mark Doyle on later. Mark Doyle has come through underage at Drogheda, and that's before any of this, you know, really started off. Like, there is progress being made, Stephen, but like, I guess it's a massive bridge to gap. It's a massive bridge between us and where we should be.
But can I just come in there though as well? I mean, I you know, from speaking to some people who are involved, and they say there's a lot we can look at, and even with our issues around registering younger players, you know, for a longer period of time. Because Gavin Bazunu was like a great success story for Shamrock Rovers. They had him on a professional contract, but obviously a lot of the young players now have agents that are encouraging them not to do that. Yeah. And the argument would be that we should have longer registration periods at underage level, that the likes of Kevin Zeffy and people like that are committed to clubs for longer than 1 year at a time.
But it needs a commitment coming the other way, though.
Position. Yeah.
But Dan, that's fine, right? Looking for that commitment from the club, right? Looking for the player to have a longer registration period. But you've got to be committing something to the player for him to give you that. So whether that's education, whatever that is. So if you're saying player that, hey, I want you to have a longer registration period, was absolutely. So what are you going to do then for me? Like, I look at the model of Shamrock Rovers have got, and so a lot of the players are studying. Obviously, they have a link to a college. So for a player to give his registration as an amateur for 2 or 3 years, you'd want to be ensuring that there's more than just the football in it, that you're looking after his education, you're looking after everything for him. And that's that Shamrock Rovers has done. I wouldn't be down for the long-term registration with there has to be a structure around it.
That's fair. Yeah. You know? Yeah. No, that's a very fair point.
What do you make of it, Pico? Like, I imagine as a Shamrock Rovers player, you're very conscious of that academy and obviously the Shamrock Rovers project to bring players through, and the fact that you're part of a big cog here.
Yeah, look, I just think the development of players is massive, and I think obviously, yeah, there is the trail of going to the UK, like, and obviously making it big, like, but the percentage of that happening, like, is so low. Like, I think if you're able to kind of, like, go away, like, after playing men's football here, like, your chances of making it over in England definitely increases, like, and it goes up. Like, so my kind of view on it is, like, if you're going away to England at 15, 16, you still have to play academy football for another couple of years, maybe five, like, up until for 23. Like, when if you're an 18-year-old or 17-year-old and you make a first team debut or play a few games in the League of Ireland, like, you're a much better prospect going over there. You've got this experience behind you. Like, I know you've mentioned Gavin Bazuna already, like, but Gav played some league games for us and played in Europa League. Like, how many people in the academy in the UK say they've done that? Like, so it's a great opportunity for players to learn the trade and really develop playing men's football.
Well, that's the big thing that we have in this country, in that, like, he got massive exposure from that he wouldn't really have gotten anywhere else, we'll say. And if you have Shamrock Rovers, and Dan often makes his point about the optics, but if you've Shamrock Rovers playing Dundalk, as you did earlier this season, in a full stadium, and people see that, and they see, say, for example, Bazunas playing in goal in that game, or they see Brandon Kavanagh is playing, these young players, that is like, you are playing, and you're also developing as a player, probably more than you would if you're playing like kids or whatever, at a sort of a half-arse level, if you want, for want of a better word.
Of course, yeah, and it's the competitiveness of it. Like, I don't know how competitive, like, academy football is, because obviously you're working, and you're trying to develop, like, a certain style of play, and trying to develop players, like, and you could argue the result isn't necessarily the most important thing. Whether you come on, like, as you say, against Dundalk in that game, like, the result is massive there. That result, that win for us was massive in terms of how we went to kick on in the rest of the league. Like, so if you're a young player and you get to experience even 5 minutes of that, 10 minutes of that, like, that'll do massive work for your development. You go really, really far with you, like, and you'll learn things about the game that you wouldn't necessarily learn in an academy game or in an academy.
Before we let you go, Stephen, actually, just to go back to that 2021 point, I mean, so we've lost a couple of more full-time operations from the Premier Division. We've got Longford and Drogheda coming up, who are more, I guess, part-time or even some amateur arrangements. I mean, what does this mean for, I don't know, we've spoken before about, I suppose, I think you would obviously have a desire for a minimum number of professionals at a Premier Division club. I mean, how are things looking for 2021 with the profile? And I guess, well, on that, though, like, are you hearing anecdotally of offers being down on account of COVID around the league?
Yeah, I suppose, first off, yeah, look, you lose Cork City, which are get relegated. They're a full-time operation. They're replaced by Drogheda, which are obviously a part-time club who've done unbelievably well to get up. And Tim has done a great job. And Conor Howie and everybody else at the club has done a great have done a brilliant job. But the reality is we're losing a full-time team in the Premier Division and replacing it with a part-time team. And then, obviously, Shelbourne get relegated. Who the plans were that they were going to go full-time with 16 or 17 professional players, and they're replaced by Longford. Again, another club who have done unbelievably well under Dara to get up. A chairman who's put a lot of time and effort into the club. So you can't knock that. But the reality is that you're basically losing two full-time teams or two part-time teams. I suppose our frustration from an office perspective is there needs to be a minimum amount of professionals at every club if we're going to grow the league. Because what are we offering this 13, 14, 15? We were talking about it earlier, and we're chatting about, you know, young players and having that option to go to England or that to be the only option. But there's no point in asking young players to stay here. And then when they break into a first team, they've no opportunity to become a professional because financially they can't be because the clubs that are there don't have the money. So what are we offering young players? And that's where we have to develop the league to be from a young player's point of view, that they can aspire to be professionals here. But for that to work, we have to have the infrastructure and the finance to be able to offer these young players them opportunities to be full-time professional.
Yeah, because look, we had a situation the other day where we had an 11-0 live on television. Now, I appreciate Athlone are at the bottom of the first division and they hadn't played for 4 weeks. And, you know, let's not get too carried away about one result. But what it does show is that there's, like, obviously, when you have a full-time team very much tuned up, you know, how good they can be relative to a team who hasn't anywhere near them. And that would be my slight fear. I know people will point to the playoff and how Longford got up, but I mean, Chels somehow lost to Athlone. The Chels fell off a cliff in the final weeks of the season. It's very hard to get your head around what happened. Like, the sort of, I don't know when you're talking to Jonathan Hill or what you plan to say, but obviously there is this obvious inequality in the league that we're going to have next year, a situation where at one end of the league, we're going to have a full-time team, you know, and players like Pico and Rovers and the Dock and whoever who have everything going for them. And we're going to have players in the same division who are basically on expenses because it's probably not worth it for them to go professional if they're getting a bit of social welfare and expenses relative to what they can pay. Like, it's a massive inequality within our league, and it doesn't really help us. And that's my opinion coming across it. But, like, is this something you can raise? Is this just a funding issue, full stop? Or how do we actually address it? It's one thing to say we want a minimum number of professionals. I understand that aim. But how do we actually get to it? Because these clubs will say, well, this is more economical for us to do it this way.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. It may be economical for the players as well, that it may suit them to have them arranged in the place. But if you want to have a professional league, you've got to have standards. And at the moment, we don't have that standard. We don't have, if you want to play in the Premier Division, here's the criteria. You must have 11 professional players. And if you can't pay 11 professional players to play in the Premier Division, well, then the division you have to compete in is the first division. And that is, it's a hard thing to say, but that's the reality where their league needs to go. We're going to really push it on. And I'm expecting, like, Jonathan Hill's coming from, obviously he's come from the FA in England, obviously knows how the league's run there. I would expect him to be very surprised at how our league is actually structured. And it's something for years that it's been a bugbear of mine, but I understood for a very long time we need to have teams in the league. And if you start putting in criteria straight away, we're going to lose teams. So we're saying incrementally we need to make it better. But again, that only comes by everybody having a plan and a goal where we're all working behind it. Like, my frustrations this year, Dan, is there's no review of what's just gone on. There's no plan to where we're going. There's nothing. Mm. There's no discussions. Like, I put this to the board of the FAI. Where is the platform for the players to discuss how we make it better? How do we make our league better? There's no review, no look back, no committees, nothing for us to have that discussion.
Just briefly, do you think he is going to make a big difference coming from the English background where, like, for years and years and years, you don't get into the fourth tier in England unless your stadium is well up to scratch? And, like, licensing has been completely laughable over here. So how does he bridge that gap?
Yeah, well, look, I think first of all, the reason he's brought in is from his commercial background. And we need to bring in revenue into the association. I think that's the reason that's the fundamental reason why he's got the job. So that's one of his key points when he comes in, is to try and get a sponsor for the league. Let's look at the TV deal. I think that's going to be the base of what he comes in first. But I think long-term, he's got to look at the professional game and where we're going. And as I said to you, have a plan. There is no plan. We just limp from season to season. Like, in fairness to Mark Scanlon, he's only in the door. He's fighting at the moment. And it is difficult. But there has to be a clear vision of where we want to go. And I don't see that at the moment. And it's unfortunate. The new FAI, as we call it, hasn't had that opportunity because of COVID to really put its plans in place. The problem I have is I just don't know where the platform is for us all to bring these forward. Like, it's terrible, Johnny, to say that we don't have a situation where we can sit with the clubs and try and make things better. There's no platform to have that discussion, which is hugely frustrating for myself and Pico and all the players in the league who just want to make it better. And not everything is about money. You know, like, little things like, for example, appealing a red card. Like, that's not a big deal, but we can't do that in this league. Like, every other league in Europe, you get a peeler. I can't do it here. There's little things that we can just be better at. And that comes with dialogue and communication. And that's something that I'm hopeful that the new FAI will bring to the table. And that there's a new committee structure. There's a new General Assembly. Council has been got rid of, and a new General Assembly. We're still waiting on all these details. Like, I'm hearing lots of words and lots of noise, but there's actually no action yet. And it's hugely frustrating for people within the game. That where is the new assembly? What are the committee structures going to be like? And are the committees going to be active? And are they going to be able to drive the game forward? And that's what we're all waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, just finally, Pico, I mean, as a player, like, you're obviously active within the union, so you've shown an interest. I mean, would you appreciate the chance just to have a voice, as Stephen says, on these issues, on these things?
Of course, yeah. There's a number of things we talked about throughout the year and probably a few years ongoing now at this stage. Like, just be able to sit down with people and voice, like you say, concerns or opinions, like, and just be heard. Like, and if something can be done, even change one thing, well, we'd see that as a massive opportunity for us to maybe have this dialogue in an ongoing period, and we might get little changes here and there, like, which could be massive for our league. As Stephen says, it's some of the things aren't even big, like, but it's these little changes that will take our league to the next level and you take it more serious.
Yeah, it's just general matters. Like what concerns you? Like what are the things you would like to see addressed?
Well, yeah, like some of them would be like financial then as well. Like I think like there's some teams that don't pay for pre-season, which I just don't understand. You expect the lads to show up training, like where in the league where some teams are being paid to be a training and other teams aren't. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, and I think there's one ongoing as well with minimum wages and that, like, which is down the road. But I think the big thing for me is like how you expect the like players to show up for 6 weeks, play for free, and then just we'll start paying you once the season starts. Like it doesn't make sense to me.
No.
Yeah. Listen, lads, we've run out of time pretty much. PFA Ireland General Secretary Stephen McGuinness and Pico Lopez. Pico, best of luck Sunday. You're going to look a bit different by then, by all accounts.
Hopefully, says you.
I prefer it as it is, actually. But, I actually can't wait for the game. Pity there isn't a crowd there. It's going to be a cracker. Stephen McGuinness, hopefully you'll be there.
Yeah, hopefully I'll see you, Johnny. I'm waiting for the FAI to confirm whether we'll be in it. If not, I may be coming back on to the podcast to have a rant about it. But anyway, we'll see.
Nice one. Thanks, lads.
Cheers, man.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much to the lads. It's now over to two of our other guests this week. Our other two guests, Mark Doyle, who's nominated for First Division Player of the Year, and Danny Grant, who's not only nominated for the Player of the Year, but is also nominated for the Young Player of the Year. It would be, you know, we mentioned earlier, Danny, that Brandon Kavanagh has gotten two nominations as well. So it would be like a little bit disappointing. You said, yeah, I got two of the three nominations, but actually didn't win any of them. So you better win something anyway.
Yeah, hopefully I win something. Yeah. It's obviously good to not just be nominated for one, but two is better. But yeah, obviously I want to win one.
There's talk you're very disappointed that you can't put on the tin of fruit though.
yeah, I know. It wouldn't have been yellow now. I would have went for a black one myself. But no, I'm feeling I can't get a tux on.
Yeah, it's been a great year for you. I mean, we'll start with you, Danny. But like, I mean, obviously it's a great year. You've been voted by your fellow pros. But do you feel like you've got to another level? I suppose we asked the same question to Pico Lopez earlier. Do you feel yourself that you've gone to another level this year in your performance?
Yeah, it's definitely developed a lot from last year. Last year, I even spoke to a few people and they just said that they could see that I was a decent player, but physically, I was probably nowhere near the level for senior, especially in the League of Ireland. It's really physical and that. So last year, I think it was more physical that I've developed this year. I was obviously hitting the gym in the last few months, so I think I've just came on in that regard kind of physically, and yeah, I think I've pushed on a bit this year.
I mean, the under 21 recognition as well, I mean, you've been in and around that. You had a good outing in Europe, which, I mean, you could have won that game. I mean, is there like, what are the highlights of the year for you? I mean, if people talk to you about, you know, big moments of the year, what stands out?
Obviously the hat-trick, my first career hat-trick, was for me personally probably my favourite moment. I love the European game, just the whole going away with the boys, because I've been away with the 21s and that, but I haven't really been away with the Bowls team. We actually went, was it 2 years ago, to Scotland, and I got sick, so I didn't even play that game. So I didn't get to go away with the boys. It was the first time being away with the boys. I loved that Europa League experience, and I thought we were actually really good, and we were very unlucky not to go through to the next round, so I liked that.
You'd kind of forget, actually, that. Sorry, Danny. You'd forget with all the Dundalk games and, you know, obviously Shamrock Rovers playing Milan. You'd forget how well Bowes actually played that night and how close he got.
I know, yeah. And I was only looking back, I'm a bit of a weird one. I was looking at their results just to see how they got on. And I think they beat a big club the round after us. And then they were 1-0 up then in the qualifier for Hervart to actually get into the Europa League. So they're obviously a really good side. You know, they think their owner spoke to our owner about their average wage and stuff, and it just blew the League of Ireland out of the water. So to keep up with them, bring them to extra time, and we actually had a couple of chances, and then I went to penalties, and yeah, we were awful unlucky. So I think people might forget how kind of well we done. We were a bit unlucky.
Yeah, they beat a French side on penalties, Stade Reims.
I think they lost. That French team were playing PSG or something the week before.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then they lost to Standard Liège just in the final round. So they were almost there. Now, I mean, we'll get to the, I don't know, is it the million-dollar question or million-pound question or whatever it is, but what's the story? I mean, you obviously have a bit of interest. I know there's a bit of chat about Hull City. I mean, where do you stand on your future at this stage? I know it's a tough one, but, you know, people would be screaming us to ask it if we didn't ask it.
Actually, Keith Long texted me last night and he said, just make sure he tells me what he's going to do.
To be honest, I've never hid the fact that I probably want to test myself in England and I want to try to get to England. So, yeah, I'm looking at that, some opportunities over in England. I've obviously spoke to Keith about staying at Bowes, and, you know, Keith knows how much that the club means to me. I've been here for, I think, 4 or 5 years now. But, yeah, I'm probably looking to get to England. And if it doesn't happen this year, that's, you know, it doesn't really matter. It can happen next year, but that's the options I'm looking at.
Do you feel it's the right time for you to go?
I think so, probably. Yeah. No, I don't. It's, you know, people have different opinions. Obviously, Keith and Trevor probably say to me that I can develop more in Ireland, which I probably can. And then, you know, other people will say, make hay while the sun's shining. And so, I don't know, to be honest. That's a decision that I have to make. Is now the right time, or do I need another year here, or what?
Well, on that then, what do you have to offer, like, an English club that some English winger doesn't have to offer?
Obviously, I probably won't walk into any team in England. I understand that. But, you know, I think maybe potential that I can develop and keep getting better, because I think for the last few years, I've constantly just got a little bit better every year. And if I keep doing that, you know, I don't know what the level I can play at. I'm not sure. What can I offer a team? I suppose I've got goals this year. Hopefully, I could offer a team goals and kind of dribbling. I think I'm obviously good in 1v1s is probably my strength. So maybe that kind of attacking in 1v1 in fullback areas.
It's a bit of a strange one, because if you do leave Bowes, I mean, as you said, you've had a great time there. I know you're a big favourite with the fans there. I think your mother is quite popular with the fans. Sure, some of her social media activity, which is not a sentence I ever expected to use on the podcast.
I know.
You know, we've said it. Like, I mean, listen, you just got to go on with your life and do what you got to do. And I think people completely understand that. But it's a bit of a shame if you don't get to say goodbye. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of if it turns out that your last game in front of fans was pre-lockdown, it just may turn out to be that way.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be ideal that I haven't got to play in front of a full Jody, a packed out Jody in a long time. But I suppose that's just the times we live in, and there's lots of things that, you know, people are winning trophies. Liverpool have won their first league in 20 years and they didn't get to celebrate it in front of their fans. So it's just kind of football this year, and that's the way the pandemic is. Obviously, I would have loved to say goodbye to both fans if I'm not there next year, but that's just the way it is.
Is your mother telling you to stay? Is she arguing for the don't go, don't leave me?
Yeah, she told me she's going to hide my suitcase there last week.
in terms of players that have gone, three that come to mind: Zach El Bouzedi, who hasn't like broken in yet. Then you have Sadler as well, and obviously Ronan Curtis. So all three players not entirely dissimilar to you, I guess.
Yeah, no, I know Zach very well, and I actually know Kieran Sadler well as well, because he is the same agent as me, so I speak to him. And yeah, they're actually quite similar. I think Zach is probably the most similar to me in terms of how he plays, and he's a good player, Zach, but he's struggling to get in the Lincoln team at the minute as well. So that shows you how tough it is. I know, I understand that it's not going to be a walk in the park. If I go to England, I'm not going to walk into any team, so I'll have to work very hard and kind of bide my time until I get an opportunity.
Just on that, like, what's it like for Zach in a situation like that, where you're quickly, people start talking about you, maybe, oh, you see El Bouzedi, he's not getting in there, and you think he would have done better, like, but it's really competitive over there.
Yeah, no, I'd say it's difficult for him. I spoke to him, and to be fair, he's a grounded lad. He just said he's just waiting for an opportunity, and he's just waiting for that. He's a good player. To be fair, what you're speaking about, but people start to speak about, you know, why is he not in there? I'm like that as well. I only said it to my brother last week. You know, Zach was unreal when he was in Ireland. Now he's not even in the team. But I think that's just kind of the environment. If a team's winning, you know, that's football. If a team is winning, you're not going to take players out and things like that. So I'm sure he will get an opportunity, and he's a good enough player to take the opportunity.
Yeah, Mark Doyle is not the first Mark Doyle, of course, we had on the show. The last time we did Mark Doyle on the show, he's an Italian-based Irish journalist I used to work with, who was discussing AC Milan. But this Mark Doyle is of far greater ilk and stature, really. He's one of the first players that was signed back for Drogheda. I have to say, I did a bit of looking up about you before the show, Mark, was on to Tim Clancy. Didn't realise you're actually 5 years now at Drogheda. You're from Swords, fairly close to Drogheda as well, not far down the road. And it's been a great journey for you, and one of the first players signed back this season by Tim.
Yeah, I went to the Open Trials under 17s. First time I ever went up to Drogheda, and just got signed, luckily enough, with the 17s. And then just from there, I've just worked my way up. And yeah, I'd like to sign back again. Them has a lot of faith in me. And I feel like over the last 3 years, we've been pushing to get up now with Tim. And I think finally we did it this year. Then I think we deserved it. And we're the best team in the league. And I think I'd shout at the end. And
Open Trials, you say. So, like, where were you before that? Where had you played your schoolboy football when that chance came up?
I had a home farm. I was only ever on the major team at home farm. I didn't even play at the Premier team. And then I went to Glade North. And just in the NDSL, under 16s, I think it was. Which is just only up in Balbriggan. But that's like wasn't a great level, obviously. But I wanted to push on after home farm and that. Then I just seen that the Open Trials were on. But I wanted to get into a League of Ireland club to try and push into a senior setup then. So it worked out, thankfully.
Yeah, I mean, so like, would you describe yourself as a bit of a late developer then if you weren't necessarily like playing at the outstanding schoolboy level, or where you just didn't get the breaks at that stage, or what was your view on it?
Yeah, probably late developer, but I mean, like, I always thought when I was younger I should have been playing and I should have been on the best team, but I just wasn't. So to say late developer as well, kind of, but like I think I probably should have been playing when I was younger on the best teams or whatever, but I wasn't, but sure, it worked out in the end, I suppose.
Yeah,
because there's all different ways to get there. I mean, like, Danny, you were Bangor Celtic as well. Like, you didn't necessarily go through the...
It wasn't Bangor Celtic, it was Bangor Celtic, sure.
Bangor Celtic.
he's a banger, all right, but he's playing for Bangor Celtic.
But like your own background, Danny, like, as well, like, it wasn't sort of, you know, a lot of lads just are sort of Belvedere or Joey's or whatever, and they go to, you know, some of them go to England or whatever. You took a slightly different route.
Yeah, no, I think I'd be similar to Mark. I think I'm definitely a late developer. To be fair, I played at a good team. It was a good team, but I didn't play. For the first year or two, I played, and then kind of just better players came in. I was still quite small at Cherry Orchard, and like half of that Cherry Orchard team went away. And the likes of Tyreek was back, went to Man City. Aaron O'Driscoll went away to Man City. A lot of them went away. And then the kind of the third year into my career at Cherry Orchard, I just didn't play, so I just felt like I had to leave, and I went to Crumlin just to literally play with my mates, and then I went to Bangor in the Leinster Senior League, which I think actually helped me probably the most out of anything in my career, just to get that touch of senior football when I was only 16, 17.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, for you, like, you know, once you got up to men's football level, I mean, the first division is like a lot of young players in it, but I imagine there's still a lot of learning experiences in it as well, like playing for points and some older pros. Like, how have you improved from that experience?
Yeah, well, I think my debut, I was 17 in the first division. I think we were playing Waterford at home, and Pete Manton was there. He threw me on, and I played about 5 minutes at the end, but didn't really have a chance to do anything. But I remember the next week, then we played against Athlone, and came on again, gave the ball away when we were 1-0 up. Way up the end of the pitch, but they went down the other end and scored. I was just thinking, please don't score like that all the way. I got a bit of a hiding off Pete then, and just kind of learned from that, like the importance of points and men's football, and you're not just playing for just to get on, just to get a run out, like that you're brought on for a reason, and how important it is to keep the ball, not try to take lads on when you're 1-0 up in the corner or whatever. I lost the ball and went down and scored. So I suppose I learned a lot from that.
I'm not going to lie, no. I do think you're an extremely well-coached side with the two lads, Kevin and Tim, there. But is that fair to say, or have they brought you on to a new level? Because you've had an absolutely outstanding season, if I'm right, in terms of your goal-scoring record. 12 league goals this season?
13, I think.
13, okay, that's done my research there. Anyway, get back to the question, sorry. But, so Tim and Kev, how important have they been?
Well, last season it was.
Yeah, how important have they been for the fact that you've gotten promoted, but wouldn't have been the biggest budget in the league by any stretch, and for your own personal development as well?
Yeah, they're great. They have a lot of faith in me, like, and players that we have. I think they're not afraid to play young players either, and they just kind of let you play with a bit of freedom. But the coaching side of things are great. You know, we always work on and train, and whenever whoever we're playing, you know, We'll research them, and they'll have everything you need to know about them. And on the day, basically, you just, you know, once the manager believes in you, I think you have a great chance then. Like, you know, you're going to play, and you know that no matter kind of how you play, he trusts you. So you just go on and play then at the best of your ability, and show what you can do. And he's given me that chance now. I think I've played every league game I've been available for now for 3 years on the team. So he obviously believes me, and that's great for me.
I put it to the two of you, actually. How important is man management?
Yeah, it's very important, yeah. I think my man management, particularly from Trevor, he's worked with me a lot. Keith kind of would handle the group, obviously, more. Trevor has worked with me a lot, and just kind of movements and double movements and how to actually get myself on the ball. Obviously, when you're on the ball, it's kind of...
That's not man management, that's coaching.
Oh, well, man, all right, well, then Keith will do more than man
management.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, you're going to get all mixed up there. So Trevor Cronin, in fairness, like this, if ever there's a double act, it is this pair.
I know,
like,
yeah.
If Crowley obviously has a... Everyone was talking about this long ago, about how he's coaching and that, but he's obviously developed you the way you're talking there.
Yeah, no, yeah, Trevor's helped me a lot, just mostly to get on the ball, just how where I need the angle, where I need my movements and stuff, how to get on the ball. But yeah, man management, Keith is really, really good at it. Obviously, I can't speak about Tim Adrod, I don't know him, but yeah, Keith is a brilliant man manager as well. I think that's why Bowes do so well on a limited budget.
Back to you, Mark, if you can answer the same question.
Yeah, well, I think Tim and Kev, like, I think everyone would say at Drogheda that they like them. You know, they're great. Where everybody, like, even if you're not playing, I think the lads will appreciate them, whether it's having a chat with them while they're not playing or whatever it is. But the man managing, I mean, they believe in you. That's the most thing, the confidence. That's the most important thing for me, when manager trusts you. And, yeah, they always... pulling you for a chat, whatever it is, letting you know what you're doing well, and what you can improve on, and how much you're appreciated. So that's obviously great.
Yeah, what do you make the other nominations in the first division this season? And Brandon Kavanagh was kind of an obvious one, I suppose. It was a surprise to probably a lot of people how many games he actually played for, you know, the second team Rovers, and also Yo-Yo Maddie, who was banging in the goals to UCD.
Yeah, well, I think Brandon was, every time we played him anyway, he was very good. I know he scored twice against us when we beat him 3-2 at home. And he whipped in a couple of corners when we played them away as well that they scored from, so in the first few minutes. So he was always good against us. And I don't think Yo-Yo scored against us, but every time I checked live score on the weekend, he had a goal. So he was banging them in. Him and Colin Whelan, two of them up front, the way they play with the 3-5-2, they had a... had the two boys up front, and I think Colin Whelan got 13 as well, or maybe 12. So the two of them played up top together, they were great, and they caused a lot of problems, scored a lot of goals.
Yeah, the signing of young Darren Markey as well, they're denounced the other day. Drogheda have probably been nearly the busiest team in the Premier Division with re-signs, but Darren Markey coming in is a big boost as well.
Yeah, I think last year at times we didn't create a lot of chances from midfield. So hopefully he'd play there in the attacking midfield position and create a few chances for the lads up front. But we've played against him a good few times now, and whether it's just friendlies or whatever, but every time you play him, he looks quality. You know, he's great on the ball and always looks to create chances. So hopefully I'll benefit from that, and the other attacking players will as well.
Yeah, just over to you, Danny. The introduction of players at Bowes this season, even if you go, and obviously you lost Twardek during the season as well, Bowes will lose players, but just promise Omacherry coming in, and Dawson Devoy as well, who's obviously nominated. I have to say I'm very excited by this kid. I haven't seen an awful lot of him, but he just seems to have some bit of an X factor about him.
Yeah, I think Dawson's unreal. I think he plays with a cigar in his mouth half the time. He doesn't even look like he's trying, and it's just his quality is just unbelievable. Wardy tells him trying to just give Dawson the ball and just let him do everything. So
that's a pretty big endorsement.
I know, yeah. But yeah, as you said, Bowes always lose players, and they're always, you know, people always worry about them. But I've no doubt that Keith and Trevor will bring in young lads, and you have the likes of Promise, Jack Moyle, and that two good young players. I think Evan is there for a few more months next year as well. So there's plenty of young players that that'll develop more next year.
Jesus, what about, like, he came on there against Dundalk. I was kind of down the end of the pitch. He had his couple of chances or whatever. It made me feel old, but bloody hell, the physique of that lad for his age is absolutely mad. Like,
I know. I think, is he 16 now? I don't think 16. He's 16 anymore. Yeah, he's 16 now, but he could easily pass for 21. Even the chance you're talking about, like the leap that he got on the power, he got on the header. He doesn't look like a kid. He looks like a man playing football. So, yeah, Evans a really good player as well. Brighton have got a good player there.
Yeah, they just is this the future of the League of Ireland? What Bowes have done, albeit maybe if you get with, you know, clubs with money coming in, but the amount of talent that's come through. We haven't even mentioned Danny Mandroyo as well. Players that have been playing at Bowes, and if you do get a move, or, you know, Evans going to Brighton and all that, you get to showcase your talent, you take on good opposition, you might play in Europe and you develop physically as well.
Yeah, I think it's a model that clubs will start to probably try and copy in the next few years. It's working for Bowes, and the club is going in the right direction. The players, I think the recruitment that Keith did, I think it's if it's just Keith or if there's others' opinions, and I'm not sure, but the club's recruitment is just unbelievable, whether that be getting, you know, young players that are 16, 17 or boys from England that are coming home at 20, 21. So yeah, I think it is a model that clubs will probably start to use, and the link with Kevin's and stuff like that is obviously working wonders for us.
Yeah.
Lads, it's been great to have you on. I mean, like, Danny, obviously we're going to just wish you the best of luck with whatever comes your way in the coming weeks. You kept nicely quiet when Hull was mentioned there, so we're not going to say if that means anything, or is there other options, or do we see little in the background, like, you know, a suitcase packed, or I don't know what the nearest airport is or whatever, but like, we wish you the best of luck with it, genuinely. And
you can't miss him in the airport if he's wearing that top anyway.
There's an audio. He's wearing a luminous top at the moment as well. It's sort of a high-vis tracksuit jacket. But
just Mark, a last one for Mark, Dan, before he goes. Well, you're a graduate from UCD. So you did sports business. So what are you thinking there in terms of... I presumed you were on a couple of grand a week at Drogheda, but obviously not.
Yeah, well, in the Premier now, we better be a couple of grand.
Well, you've already done your contract, I think, so anyway.
Yeah, now I graduated in, I think it was 27 then, but I haven't got a job from it anyway, but I've no experience really, but it's good to have. Obviously, football is my main thing, so I'm concentrating on that fully, but I'm doing a bit of coaching on the side as well, just to keep me occupied. But no, I don't work in the industry or anything yet, but it's good to have it. I have it behind me now for whenever I may need it. And obviously, I'm not going to be retiring from League of Ireland rich or anything, so there'll be plenty of things I'll maybe want to do then. But for the minute, like, I'm just, football's my main priority, you know, and want to do as well as I can in that.
Next season, how close will Drogheda be to full-time as a part-time team? Like, because obviously the Bowes, you think of Kenny Shields having a pop of Bowes and all that, but how close will you be to a full-time team?
Yeah, well, I don't know what the training schedule is going to be at the minute, but I'd imagine it'll be four trainings a week and a game. So it'll be Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, we normally do a game Friday, and then I'd say it'll be in on the weekend, whether it's in the gym or recovery or whatever it is. So it's still fairly flat out, like, and in the Premier Division as well. Now there's more games, obviously, as well than the First Division. You play them four times, so, and there's a lot of Friday, Monday games as well, which there wasn't in the First Division, really. So, we'll be flat out with that, really. But if you're working, obviously, it's hard for the boys that are working 9 to 4 or whatever it is, 8 to 4. But the commitment from the boys is always, like, everyone's at training at quarter past five, half five, like, start at quarter to six, and we train down till about 7:30 or 8. So it's hard for the lads to come from work, but thankfully I'm just kind of focusing on this at the minute, but so it's easier for the likes of myself. But yeah, it's great commitment from the boys, but we'll be close enough to full time, really, but obviously it's in the evening, it's the only thing.
Thanks a million, Mark. I think Dan's looking for a to Hull and back headline as well. Are you, Dan?
We'll see what happens. We'll see what the coming weeks brings us, all right? But congratulations on your nomination, lads. And
thanks, lads.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a million to the two lads. Thanks to the PFA Ireland for helping us out with the three guys and Stephen on the show today, Dan. And sadly, you've started a new chapter in your life, fatherhood. But we are coming to the end of the season. Sadly enough, only one more League of Ireland LOI weekly to come after the cup final. And being honest, like, I'm not even that sure I'll go to the game. I haven't applied for accreditation on Sunday because the whole
you won't be going then because I can tell you it's tight. They're turning people away, so you will not be going to the game.
I'm just bringing the news to you live on air. The whole experience
of the
games with nobody there has... I'm kind of half done with it at this stage. I'm glad to watch it on the TV. That's grand. You will be there. It'll be a rather fitting, if not entirely fitting, conclusion to the season. The two best teams, maybe, that we would imagine the two best teams.
What do you mean a rather fitting, if not entirely fitting, conclusion?
It's fitting who's there. It's not fitting that no one is there to watch it.
Gotcha. Yeah, and Bowes fans will be annoyed that they did come second in the league.
Yeah, I still think Dundalk are the second best team in the league. Best team in Ireland, sorry.
No, well, they did hammer Bowes in the semi-finals, so that gives them a bit. And it's been a funny old time for Dundalk, really, because we've seen with their European performances again, you know, how good they can be on their day. I mean, since our last show, they've had the Rapid Vienna defeat at home, which... again, like, they had opportunities in that game to get a better result, although they were still, I mean, the better side won. And then you look at, you know, the Athlone game, which we discussed earlier. I mean, it was just a bit of a non-event. And then we have all this stuff going on in the background as well, where they've eventually decided to do some contract talks with players. Mm. But obviously the players have good offers from elsewhere. So we'll see how much of the squad that they're going to actually keep hold of. So it's been a sort of a... it's a weird time with Dundalk, and they probably hold the key to the winter transfer market as much as anything. Now, as we speak here, I see Galway United are delighted to announce that Francely Lombardo has signed a new contract. And like, the first division is going to be wild next year because Shell's somehow relegated. They've got Alan Reynolds as their assistant manager. They're looking at some good players. As Stephen said, they were going to go full time. Cork City are down. Galway are recruiting heavily. The first division is going to be something else next year.
Yeah, that's the sort of flip side of what you were saying about the loss of those two teams to Premier. At least, like, the first division, the thing they've fallen on with the playoffs this season, I think, worked great. And as much as it was a shocking in for Athlone, even the bottom clubs, like, produced some good performances and some young players coming through. I think there are lots to be positive about, but boy, am I against a 16-team league. Something I was half thinking about before.
Jesus, no. Yeah, you can't have that. Like, I mean, unfortunately, like, you know, as I said, Shell's fell off a cliff. I wouldn't be getting carried away about overrating the first division until we see how things go.
Oh, absolutely. It's still a different league.
Like, you know, let's just see. Like, it's going to be challenging for Longford and Drogheda, who are going to be quite part-time arrangements to step up, and we'll see how it goes.
It needs more promotion, Dan. It needs more goals being shown on TV. There are a lot of good players, a lot of great goals.
You get to see
young players as well, like for what Rovers did. Brandon Kavanagh's playing. It needs more promotion because little snapshots of it will do it no harm.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I gather Rovers B have applied to be in it next year, but I think there's a draft participation agreement.
Probably be playing for Shamrock Rovers soon. Is she old enough?
I was just going to give a news story there before you interrupted. But I think there's a draft participation agreement which forbids B teams. So I think that's a clash to come in the coming weeks. That's not confirmed. There's a lot to resolve with the league in the coming weeks. As I said, no sponsor, no clarity on a number of issues, and that B team debate, I think, is going to be one of them. I know we have Limerick, we have Treaty United wanting to come in. There's other teams expressing interest, wasn't there? Irish CFC at one point. St. Francis, all sorts of stuff. And everyone wants to be in the first division. So who knows? Maybe we will have more young children playing in it. Just not my own one at this point, to be very clear.
Who wins the cup final?
Who wins the cup final? You've got to think that Rovers have been better than Dundalk this year anyway, but you've got to think that the clear run they've had at it also helps them considerably. Now, they may not need that help to win the game. And I think Dundalk...
I'm not sure about this, though. I was talking to Shane Keegan, and he was just pointing out that, listen, look at Dundalk's path to the final versus Shamrock Rovers. Rovers have kind of been going through the motions for ages now, though. They weren't all that impressive against Sligo. Dundalk have had some really tough games. It didn't do them any harm in 2016 when they had this mad schedule, to my mind.
Well, they lost the final, though, after extra time.
They held on well to their form. Mac Kelleny coming back into the team, I thought was massive against that loan. Granted, it was against that loan, but he was off the charts the way he was playing. It sets it up. I think this is going to be very, very close.
I don't disagree with you. I just think, you know, I think it's very likely it'll go to extra time again. And I think at that stage... And I think at that stage, then, the freshness... I just have a feeling maybe Rovers after extra time, but it's not a strong feeling. And there is something in what you say. I think that Dundalk are getting back to a level, and they probably have a level of sharpness, but it's just the turnaround is very quick. Like, if the game was on Monday or Tuesday, even relative to Thursday. We'll see, because I think Molde is still a big game for them. Like, it's still, there's a pride aspect to Europe, and they're not, I'd be surprised if you saw them go out on Thursday and you suddenly see that they've dropped a load of players with Sunday in mind. Although it's interesting, they're putting Nathan Dua up for the press conference, which doesn't always be a sign of anything, but generally it means they're going to play that person in the game. So I wonder, although Filippo, I'm told, likes to leave it very late and keep players guessing, so who knows? But does that mean they're going to rest McMillan or Duffy or something? It makes you wonder. It's going to be a great game. It's just a shame no one can go to it. It's, as you said, I think we haven't discussed it enough here, and I don't like to discuss it because we have a lot of listeners who can't go to games, and the last thing they want is people who are going to games complaining about the experience. But it is true. I think they will. I'm delighted to be able to go. I'm looking forward to going, but really, it's not the same. It's not close to the same. And we need spectators back as soon as possible. And we just hope for good news that allows that. And that'll have a big say in 2021. But listen, we can wrap the season next week. We can reflect on it. We can talk about what it means for 2021. Hopefully by then we'll have more clarity on some of the big decisions. And hopefully we'll have a good cup final to reflect on. Because, you know, it is still a game with a big audience, albeit that the sporting schedule is very crowded at the moment. It's going to be a big occasion in terms of a TV audience. And we hope that... I do think that it does have the ingredients for an open game, the way both sides play.
Definitely.
I think it's in Dundalk's interest. As much as Rovers are obviously going to have a lot of the ball still, and you can see the argument for sitting off them at times and how teams have had success that way. But it'd be interesting to see what way Dundalk set up, because if you play with three at the back, which they may or may not do, but you let the other side has a lot of the ball, then it happens that your wing backs end up being pegged back a lot, and that's not necessarily ideal. So I wonder, will they go to a more of a back four and more of a traditional shape? There's a few questions to discuss.
Well, I tell you what really fascinates me is Patrick McElhinney. You know, he came on against Vienna, you know, and was brilliant at times, I thought, in the second half. He's clearly capable of playing at a high level in some shape or form. But now, if he starts in that midfield, the onus is on him to show what he can do taking on Jack Byrne. Because this is who's going to be on the ball here. Two of the most talented players probably the League of Ireland has ever seen in terms of natural ability. And you always hear McElhinney mention in terms of, oh, nobody could do that. Well, McElhinney could do it. Jack Byrne could do it. Patrick McElhinney, who's been injury-ridden for so much of his career, can he literally take the bull by the horns and win the cup final for Dundalk? Because I think he has the talent to do that.
Yeah, but also so much of that is dependent on Shields and Sloggett and Gary O'Neill and McInniff and like the platform for players to do that. So and if Sean Murray as well, like, I mean, I think McElhinney is certainly one that he looks to be peaking and you'd expect him to play, but there's decisions there. We will discuss them. We will discuss them next week, and we can reflect on the season.
Are you still there?
I am still there, Johnny.
The cup final last year, I had like a scatter of points, ended up having beers with Paul Doolan afterwards, really annoyed my girlfriend and her mother at the time because I'd ordered an Indian. The Indian arrived in at completely the wrong address. And then when it did arrive, there was no rice. So about 2 hours later, full to the gills after cup final and a chat with Paul Doolan, I arrived back for a cold Indian. Won't be the same in 2020.
Did Dooley come back with you?
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Oh,
he wouldn't be. I'd say he wouldn't be impressed by a cold food. I'd say he's a man of unrelenting high standards.
Absolutely. Thanks a million to the PFA Ireland again for that show, and we will be back for the final show of an utterly bizarre 2020, in which Daniel became a father to the lovely Mia next week.
But there are limits to your life.